Hi, everybody. I'm Lisa Smith, and I'm sitting in for Carol Newman, who's off today. She's doing something to make the world a better place, I'm sure, because that's what she does. Carol will be back in the seat next Friday, I promise. There is, as per usual, a whole lot of rich cultural activity to cover in the next hour. Lots going on in this weekend in particular, so you may want to grab a pen and paper to write down what sounds good to you. Tonight, for example, the 7th Annual Book Festival Get Lit in Cannon Beach opens with a reception at 5 o'clock. The Cardam Art Party and Exhibit opens at 5 o'clock as well in Manzanita. And Cheap Whiskey and Dirty Jokes are also available tonight at the Labor Temple Bar and Diner on Duane Street in Astoria, with stand-up comedians taking the stage at 8 o'clock. The joint, if you will, is Jumpin'. And here's a little music to get you in the mood. Coldplay's Hymn for the Weekend, performed by the Brooklyn Duo. Welcome back to Arts Live and Local. I'm Lisa Smith, sitting in today for Carol Newman. And my first guest is author Deborah Reed, here to talk about her latest novel, The Days When Birds Came Back, Come Back, The Days When Birds Come Back, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. The book is set on the Oregon coast in a fictitious town that sounds a lot like Manzanita. The story focuses on two intensely damaged individuals whose lives intersect. The book is about grief, guilt, self-recrimination, love, and importantly, the power of nature to heal broken souls. It's also about renovating a house on the coast, which I found particularly compelling, having tried to do something like that myself. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Nice to have you. Let's start with you. This is your fourth novel. You've also written two thrillers under the name Audrey Braun. You hold an MFA in creative writing from Pacific University and are co-director of the Black Forest Writing Seminars at the University of Freiburg in Germany. You also teach creative writing at workshops elsewhere in Europe and around the United States. And you live in Manzanita.
That's right.
So when and why did you move to the coast, and when and why did you start incorporating it into your writing?
Well, the first time I ever came to Manzanita, which is where I live, was back in 2011. The Manzanita Writers Series invited me out with my novel, Carry Yourself Back to Me, had just come out. And it was the first time I'd ever been there and absolutely fell in love with it. I couldn't believe I'd lived 20-something years in Portland and never been to Manzanita. So after that, I continued to return to Manzanita to work on other books. I would come for a few days at a time, or a week or two, or 10 days. And when I was finishing my novel, Things We Set on Fire, the ending, I didn't know how it was going to end, and the ending actually takes place in Manzanita. So that was the first time it fully infiltrated where art imitated life. And then I moved away for a couple of years down to Los Angeles. so that my youngest son could attend a high school there. And once he was finished, I wanted to return to Oregon, and I just didn't want to go back to Portland. I really wanted to be at the coast. So Manzanita was the most obvious choice, and I've been there for 3 years now.
And it's going well.
Very, very well.
That's terrific.
I love my coastal community.
It is a lovely little town, actually, Manzanita.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot going on there, more than meets the eye. It appears sleepy on the outside, but there's so much happening there. Great food, a great community of writers, a lot of literary events, art events going on.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a bit about this novel. I just finished this morning, and I wept at the end of it. I have to admit it. It was quite moving. I found it quite moving.
Oh, I'm so
I really
glad.
Enjoyed it.
I'm glad to hear that. Thank you.
Now, one of the two main characters, June, is a novelist, and so I'm wondering if the book is semi-autobiographical.
Yeah, this is the first time I have written a character who is a writer. I've always been reluctant to do that for many reasons. One is that people would think it was me. And then that sort of limits my imagination as far as what she can be. But in this case, it just seemed like the right time to have a writer living on the coast. It seemed like the perfect career for her to have in the state of mind that she was in and the way that she was sort of fumbling and alone, because writers are always alone. And so what else could she be doing for a career if she weren't a writer and she's all by herself? I needed her to be an artist of some kind, and writing was the most obvious choice. I've always been interested in the arts, particularly design, architecture. So I've had other characters be, in my novel Olive, for example, the main character is an architect. And I love doing that because I get to then research architecture and talk about design and talk about the furniture in the house and those kinds of things. So I'm, a little bit like living out alternate selves then
well,
that
you,
way.
You do that with this book because the other main character, Jameson, is, I don't want to give too much of the novel away. But
he's a carpenter.
He's a carpenter.
He refinishes... he restores historic homes.
And June has a house that needs to be redone, which is a Sears kit home.
Yeah.
So after I read the book, I had to look up the Sears kit homes, and they're amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, they're such incredible homes, and it really is. I'm curious why they don't still make them. It just seems
kind of
like...
They'd be way too expensive, I think.
Probably, because The textiles, everything was of a very high quality. I mean,
right.
They're a kit, and you would think it would be, you imagine this kind of prefab, cheap tools kind of deal, but not at all. I mean, it was hardwood, the finest trimming. The kits came with everything that
plinth
you needed.
Plinth blocks, even on the molding. I mean, who has plinth blocks anymore,
right? Exactly. Yeah.
So the two main characters, they have two parallel stories going on initially that intersect. And they're very intense, these two people, Jameson and June. Where did they come from?
Yeah.
In your head, I mean.
In my head, characters in fiction, they need to be broken or they're not interesting. They need to be flawed. There has to be some conflict for us to take an interest and care and sympathize and want to see them get better. But we all have our broken places, so we're no different than these characters, and that's why we love them so, especially when they reflect our own flaws and grief and problems. So June came to me, as most characters do, from a sense of place. I always start with the setting of where the story will take place. And I love to write with a strong sense of setting, the landscape, what grows there, the type of animals, the type of birds. And of course, the Oregon coast is just lush with so many. It kind of writes itself. It's just so beautiful. There's so much going on, and it's like theater with the weather. There's always something happening.
Right.
And so my characters grow organically out of setting in that way. And that is exactly how I began with June, thinking about how did she get to this place? And she's alone, and what would it be like? And I was living alone myself at the time. I had recently been divorced, and so I was living alone, and I was an empty nester all at the same time. So I had a very strong sense of what it was like to be completely alone on the Oregon coast.
And that comes through truly in her situation. And but she comes from Ireland. I mean, she comes back to Manzanita. She was from the coast, and then she went
yes.
to Ireland, and then and her grandparents are from Ireland.
Yes, her grandparents are immigrated from Ireland, and I had been to Ireland because I go to Germany every summer to teach at University of Freiburg. I tend to take trips while I'm there. I take advantage of
right.
my being over there, and so
it's sort of it's just a couple of hours to get to.
Yeah,
Ireland.
To get anywhere really, and so I had spent some time alone in a shepherd's hut in County Carlow, where I ended up having the novel that part of the novel take place, and that's where the grandparents are from. I was in that area and got to know and feel and talk to the locals and see what it would be like. And so that sort of, you know, as far as novels being autobiographical, I mean, these kinds of things, they seep into the work, but they serve the purpose of explaining or exploring the character's truths. And it's so these are settings, you know, Ireland, the coast, these are settings for June's family, her grandparents, her father, herself. And then Jameson is the other character who had lived on the coast with his wife and two children, which you learn early in the book he has recently lost, 7-year-old twins. And so he and his wife fled the coast for Central Oregon. And then June is, when she needs someone to renovate the house, he comes highly recommended. And it is June who draws him back.
Right, which is it's the only part of the novel that I found was difficult to believe, is that you could get such an amazing carpenter to come all the way from Eastern Oregon over here and to work on your house for 3 months. But I suspended disbelief for that because it was worth it.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that is
it hasn't happened to you, has it?
Well, sort of.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Very first place I rented in Manzanita was completely gutted. It was a duplex. It had been completely gutted. And when the idea for this novel also came from my neighbor, who the detail in the apartment was so spot on and beautiful. It was all lovingly, beautifully done, and I was the first person to live in it. And she told me the story about the guy who did the work. He lives in Washington State, and he travels to places that when the house needs renovating, and he lives in the house in a sleeping bag, just like I had Jameson live in mine in the story, and he renovates the house as he's living inside of it. So that there it's like he's like a migrant worker.
So there it was true.
It's true.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'd like to get this guy's telephone number for sure. It's so hard to keep anybody come to work at the coast.
It is my house.
It's impossible virtually.
It's true. And what's even stranger is I ended up getting that guy's number because eventually I did buy a house. I did get married and we bought a house and we needed someone to renovate it. And I actually called the very guy who, you know, planted the seed for this story. And he really wanted to come and do the work on the house, but he was in the middle of another project and couldn't do it. And the timing was off, but it was a very strange convergence of
reality
worlds.
And fiction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Does he know that he was a model sort of?
Oh yeah,
Jameson?
I sent him a copy of the
oh,
book.
He
enjoyed it immensely.
It's terrific. It's very well written. It's
thank you.
It's very beautifully told tale, and it has all sorts of prizes of surprises in it, which I think is important.
Oh,
you don't anticipate what's going to happen.
Oh, I'm really glad to hear that. Yeah. I mean, as a writer, I'm fumbling around in the dark. You know, I myself don't really know always where it's going. And so when I feel surprised by something that occurs to me one day, I feel then confident that, well, if it surprised me, it'll probably surprise the reader. And I love hearing when that actually happens.
What sort of a relationship do you have with your editor? How much does your editor, how much work does your editor do on your work?
Oh, I love her. We have a great relationship. She's extremely supportive of my work, and there's sort of a symbiotic relationship there where she can see what it is I'm trying to do, and if I fall a little bit short somewhere, all she does is nudge me and say, you know, can you go back and look at this one thing? I don't think you hit the note yet, and that's all I need to hear. And I just dig back in and try to get it a little deeper, and then we're off and running to the next thing.
How many books of yours has she edited?
This is the first one. Mm-hmm. She said, this is the first one, and I'm in the middle of writing another one with her.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
You're very prolific.
Yeah, well, I work a lot, yeah.
I guess, yeah. And it is very lonely work. I mean, you're doing it by yourself, as you say.
Yeah.
So I wrote down a couple of notes about the book while I was reading it, and it's not semi-autobiographical, but you've been to Ireland to do some research, sort of.
Yeah.
Before the fact.
Before the fact. And then I was just there last year on my honeymoon, actually.
Well, congratulations and best wishes to you.
Thank you very much.
And June has a terrible drinking problem.
She does.
You don't.
No, I don't. I don't. But
and you never have.
I never have. But I'm
because you sort of hit the nail on the head with it, I think.
Well, that's because I know a lot of people who do have a drinking problem, and I think most people know someone who does. Most families have people with addiction issues, and my family was no different. So, I've been around it my whole life. I, for whatever reason, it's like the gene skipped me. I can't really explain it. I can barely finish a glass of wine for whatever reason. It's just like I don't have that desire or that compulsion, but I know people who do.
Not to do any cultural stereotyping, but the Irish side of my family likes to drink a lot.
Yes.
And that's the part of me that likes to drink a lot, I think.
Yeah. And I, you know, there's, yes. Well, and my background is, my family is all from Ireland and England. So it is a cultural thing. My family, they all come from the South. They're all from Appalachia, actually. So there's some really hearty drinkers in my family.
To say.
Yes.
So, and then June is also quite grief-stricken. Were you grief-stricken? Going into the novel?
Not just that I was alone, just that I had, you know, I had a previous life that I was now suddenly cut off from. So in that sense, I was feeling a tremendous sense of loss and having to transition into a new life by myself, and then a new life with someone new. And so, you know, going through a divorce and becoming an empty nester at the exact same time is a lot to handle. But I do know people who have lost their children. As far as death, and for me personally, losing my grandmother was a very difficult thing for me. She was like a mother to me. And so that, you know, I draw on that too in the novel. And I have the grandparents in the novel as these caretakers.
Lovely people.
Yeah, thank you.
Would you mind reading a little bit from the book?
Sure, I'd love to. I'll just read the opening couple of pages here.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. It was nearly noon on the Oregon coast, the day already hot, when June Byrne shook out her father's old camp blanket on the backyard lawn, removed her T-shirt, and lay with bare breasts to the sun. She had phoned the contractor again, and, like last week and the week before, hung up at the sound of his voice. Except today, a woman answered and pleaded gently with June. Why do you keep calling? What is it you want? June was drawn to the warmth of her tone and hesitated before disconnecting the call. Aside from the golf course beyond the edge of the property, June's yard was relatively private, bordered by birch trees and evergreens and ferns. She lay squeezing her eyes shut, trying to exchange the world inside herself for the one out around her. the foul sea breeze slicing the air, the chickadees singing at the feeders. Every now and then she heard the thwack of a short iron hitting a glassy little ball. But the salty sweat on June's upper lip made her think of margaritas on the beach, and June was 1 month sober, and yes, it was not quite noon. 35 years old, nearly 36, and at night, the windows open, June could smell her own skin, and she smelled different without the drinking. She was different, or perhaps she was something of a snake, having shed one skin to live inside another. The contractor came highly recommended, though the phone number she'd been given was no longer in service. She had only his name and that of the small town where he'd moved in recent years. Information gave a listing for a landline. When June hung up on him the first time, she stared at the phone, surprised at what she'd done, and expected he might dial her number in return. He didn't, not even after the second and third calls she'd placed the following week. Perhaps his phone didn't have caller ID. Perhaps he didn't want to know who she was. Perhaps he believed she was someone he knew and never wished to hear from again. June pressed the heels of her hands into her eyes and drew a long breath. The rot still drifted on the wind. It would take most of the summer to restore all the woodwork and period detail in the bungalow next door. The plumber had already come and gone, and this had been his best guess. The electrician, too, his initial phase of rewiring behind the walls finished so quickly. A week? June had been drinking then, and writing, too, so it was hard to say. At least the whole summer, the electrician said, like having a roommate. He laughed. Right there, every single day, a cousin coming for the summer like when you were a kid. You ever have a cousin come stay like that when you were a kid? June was an only child of an only child. She shook her head no. 7 weeks ago, she was high above the earth, drinking Manhattans on a plane from Ireland, her adopted country for the past 12 years. She'd come home to America, to the carriage house where she was raised, a place her Irish immigrant grandfather built from a mail-order kit nearly a century ago, a man whose presence June still felt in every piece of molding and plank of creaky fir. He'd built the bungalow next door at nearly the same time, and when her grandparents died 3 years ago, their absence had the quality of a dream, a tale someone told that couldn't possibly be true. Not here, atop the ridge that had once been a logging road, not here, where all of June's life, her grandparents shaped this place in the same way they had forever shaped June.
Thank you. A couple more questions for you about this book.
Sure.
The book's title, The Days When Birds Come Back, comes from a poem of the same name by Emily Dickinson. Can you unravel this for me? Explain.
Yeah. Well, I didn't come up with the title until toward the end of the novel, actually. It's a poem that I've always loved. And what the poem is about is Indian summer, when there's this false calling of the return of the birds, and things start to bloom again. And this is the same theme that runs throughout the book. Is this the right time to return? It's the right place, but is it the right time? And so all throughout you have June, you know, as you mentioned, calling Jameson and asking him to come back to this place to work on this house. June has also returned there herself. There's a little bit of back and forth also with Jameson, and you don't know till the very end if what the decision is about whether to return and when.
Makes perfect sense. One last question about Manzanita and I guess Gearhart. The golf course and the elk herds show up.
Well, we have a golf course.
Oh, you
in
do
Manzanita.
In Manzanita. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I should have known
yeah,
that.
We do. And you know, I placed it differently in the story. But the first place that I rented when I was when I moved to Manzanita had a golf course right behind it, right beyond some trees. And so I got to see firsthand these golfers back there. I could hear everything
right,
they had
all
to
the
say.
Cursing. And
yeah, all the cursing, the whole thing, and. But I wanted to place these homes up on this ridge
right.
in a more remote area, so I just made the golf course up there on the ridge with with them for the purposes of the story.
Well, it works, and the the elk are coming through, of course.
Yeah, which they do, and they would come right into my backyard.
One last question.
Sure.
Have you ever seen a fox there, actually?
I have not seen a fox.
Because a fox shows up for June, I think, as
oh, there are, yeah, there are.
And I've never seen one at the coast.
I have not either, but I know that they exist. Kind of like a...
I was hoping that you'd seen one, too.
A ghostly thing, yeah. No, but I hope to.
Well, thank you. Author Deborah Reed, Deborah's latest book, which I highly recommend, is The Days When Birds Come Back. You can meet Deborah, hear her read from her book, get your own copy, signed by the author, correct?
Correct.
And have lunch this Wednesday, May 23rd, part of the Luncheon in the Loft series at Beach Books and Seaside. There is, of course, a fee, and you'll need to reserve a spot. So for more information, go to beachbooks37.com. That's beachbooks37.com. Or call 503-738-3500. That's 503-738-3500. Thanks again, Deborah Reed.
Oh, thanks so much for having
me. Hope to see you again.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
There are those among us willing to give back on anything, hollow hope of what is coming, a lifetime dangled by a string. But this ocean dives so deep, and this river runs so wide, I won't be counted one among them until my soul is satisfied. Brick and brick, buried hunger, keeping all desire dark. And then we are like lies, we are tearing it apart. There are those among us lying, saying nothing is for free. And then we are like lies, and we will not leave until we eat. Playing kings and playing peasants, do we get what we are owed? An eagle comes and talks of failure, a rabbit offers up its throat. Will they buy even our breathing? A river strangled by a dam, less than 1% are taken. So tell me, who dries up this land? Is it worse? No future. Is it worse to be afraid? And then we are like lions pumping fire in our veins. We are born in perfect harmony. We are born with the perfect need. And then we are like lions. We are bearing all our. It is coming down the mountain, fear that holds you like a cold. It wants to settle in your footprints, keep you still from where you're going. All you think you know of losing, all you doubt of innocence, that this sky still hangs above you, every day just wants to quit. There's no life to see to guide, and it scares you just to say. And then we are like lies, nothing there's getting our way. See your face, they say it's drifting, and your truth just cut apart. And then we are like lies, we are golden in our hearts. And then we are like lies, standing on 2 feet, hanging on the kitchen wall for everyone to see. Get out your banjo so we can sing. There are winds that wrap and hold me, There are whispers in the chains. I cannot hold all that is sacred. They are holding on to me. Kiss the years that are the dying. Kiss the face that makes you stay. They are in your rhythms walking. They are showing you the way. Breath and breath above the sickness. Shouting threats upon your life. And then we are like lights. We're fool enough to fight. It will chink you in. Taking more than left to live. And then we are like lights. We're strong enough to give. And then we are like lights. We're strong enough to give.
That was our own homegrown Blind Pilots, Like Lions, from their most recent album, And Then Like Lions. It was almost 10 years ago that Three Rounds and a Sound, Blind Pilot's first album, was released. A decade later, with two additional studio albums and sold-out concerts throughout the U.S., Europe, and the U.K., the band is still going strong. And this summer, for the 10th anniversary of Three Rounds and a Sound, the band is playing shows in Northwest cities from Vancouver, B.C. to Portland, ending their tour here in Astoria on July 28th. Tickets just went on sale at the Liberty Theater's website, libertyastoria.org, so you better hurry if you want to get a seat. LibertyAstoria.org. You're listening to Arts Live and Local on Coast Community Radio. I'm Lisa Smith, sitting in today for Carol Newman. My next guest is Glenn Thomas, chairman of the North Coast Chamber Orchestra, here to tell us a bit about the two concerts of classical favorites that will be performed tonight and Sunday.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for coming.
Fine. I need to correct a little bit. It's the North Oregon Coast Symphony, a name that listeners are probably more familiar with, presents the North Coast Chamber Orchestra. And that's a mouthful. So we usually shorten it to North Coast Chamber Orchestra, but...
So the symphony presents the chamber orchestra.
Correct.
And this is an all-volunteer orchestra, is it not?
That's correct. Yeah, we play for fun. Yeah, we don't get paid. The board doesn't get paid. It takes a certain amount of money to actually put on the concerts, and we collect donations at the concerts, and we have us grants when we can get them.
Uh-huh.
And that's how we pay for things, but it's strictly nonprofit.
Well, let's talk a little bit about these two shows that you're going to be doing, the two performances.
The first one will be this evening at the Cannon Beach Community Church in Cannon Beach. And then
that's at 132 East Washington Street.
Correct. I don't have the notes in front of me. But
I've
yes.
got them in front of me.
Yeah,
it begins
that's good.
At 7 o'clock.
Then the second concert will be Sunday at 3 o'clock at Rockaway Beach Community Church in Rockaway Beach. Strangely enough,
how lovely.
I don't have that address either.
That's at 400 South 3rd Avenue, but I can't imagine anybody would get lost in Rockaway Beach. Huh?
It's hard. I've done it, but it's hard.
So I think that it sounds terrific. Now, what are you going to be playing?
It is a group of a set of, actually a fairly eclectic set of pieces. There's some Tchaikovsky and some Brahms, and there are some solos.
I see you've got Grieg.
Grieg, yes.
Verdi.
Lots of things.
Excellent.
My favorite in the set is the academic overture, Brahms. It's been described as the 19th century version of P.D.Q. Bach. So.
But you're doing P.D.Q. Bach too. You're doing Peter Schickele's Schleptet in E B major, right? For some fun.
Schleptet in E flat. Actually,
E-flat.
That's been cut. So.
Oh, sorry.
We'll do that at a later concert.
I'm going to cross that.
That's fine. I think it's actually in the program. It was just cut in the last few days. So,
because it was too silly?
The musicians are having a difficult time taking it seriously enough.
Right.
So we'll do it again later.
Maybe.
That's the idea.
P.D.Q. Bach, he's a funny guy.
Yeah. He's
funny, peculiar, and funny, ha-ha.
Well, he's been described as... The 21st and oddest of Johann Sebastian Bach's 20-odd children.
Right. Indeed, he went to Swarthmore College, as I recall, because I worked there, and he would come to campus occasionally. But he was a really a riot of a guy.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've seen Peter Schickele in concert a few times, and thoroughly enjoy it.
So let's talk a little bit more about the orchestra. It's an all-volunteer orchestra, and you're now seeking string players.
That's correct. We used to be a lot bigger. That's the reason. That's what drove the name change. People were coming to see the North Oregon Coast Symphony and getting a chamber orchestra instead, and that was confusing. That's why the new name. Now that we have two names, that's doubly confusing.
You don't have a symphony anymore.
We're not quite big enough. That's why we want more string players, so we can get big enough to do some other things that we don't have the people to
do
now.
You're looking for violinists, violists, cellists, and bassists?
And string bass, and wind players, too.
Okay.
But strings are really what we need now.
So if people are out there and they're thinking, I can play the violin, I could do this, or I play the cello, who should they contact and how should they get hold
they
of
have,
you?
They have, well, there's our brand new email address, which is info@NorthOregonCoastSymphony.org.
That's easy.
You can contact our conductor.
Who's Corey Peterson?
Corey Peterson, and I bet you have his contact info
there. I do have his contact information right in front of me. It's 503-836-2198. That's 503-836-2198. Or you can email Corey Peterson at nocscorey@gmail.com. nocscorey@gmail.com.
Yep, that's and if you're at all interested in joining us, our mission is to bring live classical music to the North Coast, and we have a secondary goal of education. So if you're a high school student who would like to join us, you're welcome too. We'd love to have you.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Glenn Thomas. We're going to repeat though where and when. And what is happening?
Okay,
tonight.
The concert tonight is at 7 o'clock at Cannon Beach Community Church, and then again on Sunday at 3 o'clock at the Rockaway Beach Community Church. Now that the Sunday, some of our earlier publicity had the Sunday concert being somewhere else at a different time.
Tisk tisk.
So it got changed.
Rockaway Beach Community Church.
Rockaway
That's at 400
Beach.
South 3rd
yes.
Avenue in Rockaway Beach.
Yes.
And the program is going to include Grieg, Brahms, Verdi, Tchaikovsky, and Fauré still?
Yeah.
Excellent.
That's still in there.
Are you a musician yourself?
I'm a percussionist. I'm not playing on this particular concert because there is no percussion.
Uh-huh.
Some other concerts, yeah, I do play.
Oh, excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming. And we're going to listen a little bit to a little bit of Tchaikovsky right now.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, so that was not the Tchaikovsky we were just listening to. That was the Beatles. And why am I playing the Beatles? Because I'm welcoming my next guests, Denise Reed, Bob Goldberg, and Reverend Tim, our own, KBON's own Reverend Tim and own Bob Goldberg, here to talk about North Coast Chorale's spring concert. Pardon?
And yes. Denise. Yes. Denise is also.
Denise, you do radio here?
I have just retired my Coral Gems that's been on for 10 years.
Of course. I had no idea it was you.
It's Denise. Yep.
I've never seen you on the air here. You never know faces. That's right. Anyhow.
Just here.
That's okay. Thank you for coming. Mm-hmm. And you're going to tell me about the
concert,
which is the Just for the Fun of It concert.
Right. It's music of the 60s and 70s, and North Coast Chorale is performing at the Performing Arts Center, the PAC, at 16th and Franklin. Concert tonight, 7 p.m., and Sunday at 2 p.m., and it's just for the fun of it. We're hoping that the audience gets in to this rock and roll phenomenon that these two gentlemen are going to talk more about. Reverend Tim, of course, because he has a program and he's a specialist.
I'm a specialist. And
Bob is part of our choir also. And so,
Bob, what are you going to be singing?
We're going to be singing the Beach Boys and the Mamas and Papas.
Can you sing a little bit right now? Can you sing a little bit right now?
Oh, my goodness.
Good.
We're going to be falsettoing.
I like it a lot. And Reverend Tim, what's your role going to be?
I get to be the kind of the Carson Daly of the piece, the Johnny Carson. I'm the host. So I get to introduce the various songs and start the show and hopefully not get yanked off with a hook, you know?
And talk a little bit about rock. And
And then when's your next concert?
There's one tonight at 7, mm-hmm. and then Sunday at 2.
And how many people will be singing?
There'll be approximately 35 to 40 people singing.
That's fantastic.
With soloists.
And dancing.
Dancing too?
They'll be moving,
at the dancing
yes.
at the PAC?
We want the audience to move and to sing along with us. We want them to get pumped up. That's why we had you play the Beatles.
Okay. Everybody pumped up out there?
I hope so.
Okay.
We can see you on the radio, as we used to say.
We can see some of you just sitting there. So get out of your chairs.
Yes, get out of your chairs and come down to the PAC tonight at 7 or again at 2 o'clock on Sunday, May 20th. And listen to and dance to the North Coast Chorale's Rockin' Out at the Performing Arts Center, corner of Franklin and 16th Streets. And the name of the concert is Just for the Fun of It.
Right.
And they mean it.
Right.
So there you go. Thanks for coming, everybody.
Okay.
Oh, is that
we'll
it?
Yeah,
what else can you talk about?
Waiting for, and my time was running wild, a million dead-end streets, and every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me, but I've never caught a glimpse how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test.
Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
Don't wanna be a richer man.
Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
It's gonna have to be a different man. Sides, but never leave the stream of warm and permanent sand. So the days float through my eyes, but still the days seem the same. And these children that you spit on as they
try to change their worlds.
That was, of course, Changes from David Bowie, originally released on the album Hunky Dory in December 1971, and as a single on January 7th, 1972, the day before David Bowie's 25th birthday. Time really flies, doesn't it? So I've got right now with me in the studio English honor students from Astoria High School, Keegan, Dalton,
Hi.
And Nicole, here to talk about talking, also known as cultural conversations, which are happening on Thursday, May 24th from 4 p.m. till 5:30 p.m. in the Astoria High School Commons. Okay, please tell me why you do this, what I should expect when I show up on Wednesday.
Well, I think that the main purpose of this is to make sure that people have a better understanding of different cultures that are in the area. We have a variety of different people coming from, you know, different ethnic backgrounds, different social groups, things like that. And so coming together and sharing their stories provides a different insight for many of the people that will be attending.
So if I were to attend and I'm not one of the people that you're talking to, will I just be eavesdropping fundamentally at the conversations, listening?
Effectively, yes. Or you could listen and you could ask questions of the speaker. There'll be a time period so that you could ask questions and really get to understand. But really, it's about people coming to listen to the stories of people who aren't able to tell them as often as they should be.
This could kind of be like an informative type deal where you're talking to someone and the cultures vary from someone who was gay, they were raised in the South, and that's something that's heavily impacted them. And you go from something like that, and then there's also a culture of people who play Dungeons and Dragons. So, I mean, there's also, like, this varying level of, like, I don't want to say seriousness, but there's this varying level of, like, impact that the cultures hold, and, like, some of them are things you can join, and other things are things you can understand, but it's all something that you're there to listen to. And it's all stuff that you're like, this is interesting and I want to know more about it. And I think that's the essence of it.
I get that. That's terrific. And what types of people? I see that from my notes that an Astoria City official will be there. Who's that?
Yeah, Cindy Price. I'm actually asked her to come and she was very excited to tell her story about being a city clerk.
Oh, she'll be fabulous. She's got a great story to tell.
Yeah, she's great.
And who else?
So, well, we have some other cultures that are represented are First Nations, which is the local Indian, a local Indian tribe.
Which one? Do you know?
Dalton, which one?
It's Miss Samantha Beckett, a local...
Chinookan or...
She is not local, Klatsik, actually. She's from California. She's actually one-fourth Hoopa and one-fourth Yurok.
Oh, wow.
So she gives us a perspective on being... She's roughly one-half Native, and so she's going to bring a perspective on what it's like to be First Nations here.
Fantastic. Who else?
Well, I invited a woman from the Philippines, and she moved here when she was in her 20s, so she'll be talking about what life was like there and her transition to living here in the United States.
Yeah. And then even just to list off some, we have First Nations, gay man raised in the South, Dungeons and Dragons. There's actually a Korean-American going to come to talk about being a Korean-American. We have a person talking about living with schizophrenia, a Filipina woman, a small-town police officer, a small-town city official, which is Cindy Price. We have a drag queen who wants to tell his story.
Who's the drag queen?
Marco Davis.
Excellent. Fabulous. Yes. Marco's fabulous. You have Marco and Cindy. Those are two of Astoria's biggest stars.
Yeah, they're nice to talk to, and they're very interesting.
They really are. And all these others sound very interesting, too. And then who are you going to be leading conversations? The three of you will be having conversations?
Yep.
With people you've invited?
Yes. Each student has someone that they have invited to come. And so we'll be sitting with our storyteller. And it'll be kind of like a semicircle of people there to ask questions and listen in on the stories.
And do people have to get tickets in advance, or do we just show up, or...?
Completely free, and you can come in whenever you want from 4 to 5:30.
This is marvelous. Each of you tell me your name, because I don't have your last names. Tell me your first and last names and a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm Keegan Rasko. You might have heard my voice on the radio before. I am an intern here, and I like working here, and I'm also kind of, I like to involve myself in the political scene.
Keegan, I've met you before, because you're the person that I met who I know is going to be president of the United States someday, possibly.
Or
at least a U.S. representative.
Something like that.
I'm Nicole Ramsdell. I am a sophomore at AHS. I mainly stick to the music in the community. I'm involved in the high school wind symphony and jazz band, and I've helped out with several music organizations in the area.
I'm Dalton Summers. I'm also a sophomore at Astoria High School. I like to involve myself with kind of the student government. This year I was a class officer. I'm going to be a school officer this next upcoming year. I also kind of like to be involved with the sports aspect. I'm one of the whole three wrestlers at the school, so that's always fun.
Well, thank you, Keegan, Dalton, and Nicole, and the rest of Astoria High School's Honors English 10 class for arranging cultural conversations at the Astoria High School Commons this Thursday, May 24th, from 4 p.m. until 5:30, free of charge.
Thank you for inviting us, and thank you for all who are listening.
Well, I'll be there. I look forward to it.
We hope to see you there.
Was our own David Crabtree, and who else? Dick Weissman performing Ye Olde Square Dance from their 2002 Tours Detours album, Crabbo. Thanks, Crabbo. And who have I got in the studio now? My next guest is musician and all-round good guy Dave Ambrose, here to talk about contra dancing. And you're going to want to participate in it. Why you going to want to participate in it? And you can do that tonight. Welcome, Dave.
Well, thank you for having me. Well, on such short notice, it was wonderful to be back here at KMUN.
Well, it's nice to have you back. So for the uninitiated, contra dancing, what is it? Where is it?
Contra dancing.
When is it? And what is your role in it?
Okay. It's tonight. It starts at 7 o'clock with a beginner's lesson. It's at the Astoria Arts and Movement Center at 10th and Exchange Streets. There's an admission fee, but children under 12 are admitted for free. Contra dancing, it's got a couple hundred year tradition from Europe.
What is it? Let's talk about what it is exactly.
Okay. It's a little bit, just a little bit like square dancing. It's all done to counts of eight, and each count of eight steps puts you through what we call a figure. So something like a do-si-do or an allemande left or right or circling in a group of four people. Some of you out there may be familiar with what I'm saying. You do it with a partner, and the partner doesn't have to be someone you come with. You can find a partner when you get there. It doesn't even have to be someone of the opposite sex. It can be, we have ways of doing this. So we don't have to worry about having an even number of males and females for this.
Yeah, I think that's old hat anyway. I don't think you have to worry about that ever anymore. In tango.
So you're doing it ostensibly with a partner, but you're doing it with another couple. And the four of you do various moves. And one time through the music, which by the way, is live music, a four-piece string band will be there. One time through the music, you discover that there's a new couple in front of you to dance with. So, in essence, you get to dance with everybody there. A little bit.
Hmm.
You get to dance with everybody
there. Where are the roots of this? It sounds like it's sort of old English or something.
It came from Europe. The French found it very popular, and they called it contre dance, which is country dance
in
French. And it stuck. It
I
stuck.
See.
It traveled to England, and then it came over with the colonists to New England. It's very big in New England, and it's very big in the Northwest. Portland and Seattle have many, many contra dances every weekend. What I try to focus on at our dances is getting people prepared to find that, take that big leap and go to Portland and dance in Portland with a bunch of real pros in Portland.
Well, what's your role? You call the dance. What does that mean exactly?
Well, I let people know what the next move is going to be before they have to do it, so that you get these hints and cues, so you don't get lost
in what's
going on. So
give me an example. Can you give me an example of what you would say?
Okay, so we'd start off by swinging your partner. Then I'd say do-si-do, ladies, do-si-do. Then gents, do-si-do. Number one couple, swing your partner. Join hands with the number two couple and go down the hall. Turn around, come back. Ladies chain over, ladies chain
back.
Lucky
you're a trained engineer, because I think you really need to have a mind like that in order to be able to know what the heck's going on.
Oh, it's just as much fun watching as it is dancing. Well, I can't say that, because the number one rule of contra dancing is to have fun. So I have many friends who have gone their first time and danced and gotten completely lost in what they were doing, but at the end said, from the moment the music started, I was laughing the whole time.
I bet.
It's a lot of fun.
So who's playing tonight?
Tonight is the Clatsop County String Band. That's Hobe and Gina Kiter. Hobe on the banjo, Gina Kiter on the fiddle, Larry Moore on mandolin, and Knox Swanson on guitar. And they are excellent musicians, and you will be stomping your feet as soon as you get in the door.
I think I'm going to come. There's so much going on tonight, though. I don't know which place to go to first.
Well, just come for one set.
That sounds
terrific.
We go
from 7 till 10 o'clock.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dave Ambrose. The Clatsop County String Band will be playing tonight, and Dave Ambrose will be calling at the Contra Dance from 7 until 10 at the Astoria Arts and Movement Center. That's upstairs at the Oddfellows Hall on 10th Street between Commercial and Duane.
That's it.
Thanks again, Dave. Tomorrow night, Saturday, May 19th, the Astoria High School Arts and Arts Programs are hosting an arts experience. Students from the visual arts, performing arts, and industrial arts will be showcasing their talents all in the same evening from 6 until 7, the visual artists, and at 7, the doors will close during the AHS Drama Department's performance of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. That's all we've got time for, everybody, so see you soon.